Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Good evening, everyone, and here we are again on a lovely one Monday night. It's very clear but cold evening after such a wild, wild weekend. And tonight we're going to be talking about some Anglo-Saxon treasures that have been returned to the island for a limited time, and I think you should go check them out. And also, we're going to be talking about the Isle of Wight Storytelling Festival. And we've got two lovely people from the festival. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, my name's Sue Bailey, and I'm a storyteller on the island. And very happy to be involved in organising the very first Isle of Wight Story Festival.
Hi, I'm Jules Mariner, and I write and illustrate children's books, mainly picture books. And have been involved with story making for about 10 years now. So I'm a bit of a old seasoned pro, I think.
So storytelling, there's a rich tradition of storytelling on the island, and oral traditions as well as written, and some stories that sort of go back for years and years, but also there's this resurgence of new fiction, and I feel like we're moving into I guess almost a renaissance of it. There's been many years, I think, of almost stagnation from that, but I mean that's a general thing, but I feel like certainly in the last 5 to 10 years, the creativity that is coming about in the island has been amazing.
Yeah, I always think it's a bit like an equivalent of St Ives in Cornwall in terms of creativity. There seems to be little pockets right across the island of different people doing different sort of creative arts, and we're just lucky that we've got so many people here that are interested in doing different things, whatever that art happens to be. But we are very focused on the story element of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always say that, you know, every footprint, every breath, every tale, everything is all interconnected to the land, and those stories. We live in such a rich, beautiful place that I guess it almost helps those stories to grow, doesn't it?
It does, and I think that there's lots of inspirational places on the island. You know, one of our local authors, Debbie Webb, I mean, she's been inspired by all the dinosaurs that have been found on the island, so her stories are very related. You know, dinosaur Stegosaurus is a main character in her books, and I know Jules has used the natural history side of the island, the beauty of the island.
Yeah. I mean, my book that has come out, will be launched this week, is a look at a different day, every day of the year. Last year, I did a drawing. I went out, I walked my dogs in the morning, and I go and see what I can see, whether it's a flower that's just budded, or a red squirrel, or the swallows coming. And I've documented that right the way through the year. So I've got 365 drawings with the pollen count and the temperature and the day of the year and all that sort of thing. And that was very specific to my local environment. So it was a bit of a citizen science project, really, keeping an eye on the weather and the climate, the animals that I've seen. And yeah, I've seen there was a few oddities that popped up that I wasn't expecting to see, and they were at the wrong time of year as well. So,
and I guess you weave those into you've woven them into the
absolutely
sort of text of your book.
Yeah, they're there forevermore. The one that stands out actually particularly in my mind is that Flying Ant Day. We normally have two Flying Ant Days. You have the first lot, that's the big swarm And then around about 14 days later, you would have the second swarm. So it's like, just in case the first swarm gets wiped out or they all get eaten, they have a second go at flying. Mm-hmm. But last year, it was 42 days between the first one and the second one, which I've never known it to be that much before. But we did have a very hot summer, so maybe it was something to do with that. They normally like those hot days, though, don't they? Especially that first hot day, really hot day in July,
yeah,
that you get all these flying ants. But yeah,
it's interesting that you bring up flying ants. Actually, it was last year. We were out, and I don't think my son had never seen flying ants before, and this whole just millions of them, looked like millions of them, and they were all flying around, and I was telling him all about them and what was going on, and they wouldn't leave him alone. And I remember as a child my grandfather saying, go stand under a tree, put your head in a bush, put your head in a bush, and they'll all follow you, and they'll stay in the bush, and then you can walk away.
Wow.
And I told that to my son, and he did that, and they didn't, and they kept following around. Then I realised that it was probably a load of old cobblers.
Sounds like it. good old granddad.
Yeah.
But definitely fun to try.
Yeah, so didn't quite work as I'd envisaged. So before we get on talking about the Isle of Wight Story Festival, which I'm also taking part of, which I'm really excited about, we'll talk a little bit about the Anglo-Saxon treasures that have come back to the island. So these are treasures that have been found on the island and have gone out to various museums, and they've come back, and they're being shown at Carisbrook Museum. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I have. I'm actually doing some storytelling in connection with them.
Oh, brilliant. Want to tell us a little bit about that? Oh,
well, I'm going to be doing it with a couple... I think I'll keep it under wraps. I'm doing it with a couple of schools on the island.
Okay. I heard about this a while ago, that it was coming back, and I was quite excited about it. You know, there's a ton of these things that have been found over the years that have just been sort of taken away from the island and are hosted in various places. You know, things that even go back sort of pre-Romanic. There was a wand, this amazing wand that was found near Brading. It's made of hazelwood. And, you know, it was just sort of taken away and disappeared off the face of the earth, you know, as sort of sitting in some drawer somewhere.
Or perhaps used on a set of Harry Potter, maybe. Who knows?
Perhaps
been in a film.
I sure hope not, because it's a very delicate, beautiful thing. Actually, for a year or two, it was actually sitting in a shoebox on the island, sort of in someone's drawer, until someone realised, and then it was taken off to the Museum of London, I believe. And then trying to track these things down is kind of difficult. So I popped up there the other day to have a look, just very briefly. I want to spend a little bit more time around there, but the craftsmanship and the beauty of these things, these objects, are just absolutely astounding. And when you think how long ago and what they were used for, I mean, it kind of boggles the mind. And the reason, not only from a historical standpoint, but actually a storytelling standpoint, I mean, these items were, in some cases, were not just decoration, were they? I mean, they were ways of people connecting to the words that they were speaking, the magic that was around them. And they were items that were crafted with passion and love, just as the spoken word was, and they follow that same sort of direction. And it's fascinating to hear that you're going to be doing some storytelling about that. I'm so glad to hear that, because these things are so attached not only to the land, not only are they just beautiful objects, but they are. There's a story behind them, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. There's a story behind them, but they can also be an inspiration for a story as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think anything can be an inspiration for stories.
Definitely, I would agree with that. I mean, just listening to other people's conversations sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're on the bus and somebody says, well, Betty didn't tell me she was going to do that. And that can sometimes just be the trigger that you need for a new story that might pop into your head.
Yeah.
But it's all about, I think, that whole creativity thing. You have it when you're a child and you get to a certain age, around about 10, 11, probably around adolescence time, where you just lose it, you just let it go. And I think as a creative person, whether that's writing stories or illustrating or making glass or whatever it is, you sort of somehow tap back into that creativity, that play mode, and use that to make the thing that you're working on. It's really important.
Yeah, I think
so. Don't lose that. Don't lose that
absolutely.
Kid thing.
Or I mean, always believe that it's still there and that you can tap into it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. It never goes away. I mean, my children, my son, who's 5 and a half, he is just a walking storytelling machine, you know, and everything. Even when he was young and, you know, just starting to draw things, his drawings were part of the story that he was telling. You know, yeah. Unlike an illustration where it becomes an illustration of what's happening in the story. As he's telling the story, he'd be drawing that out. In the end, you'd end up with what was basically a lot of squiggles and whatever else, but it was an absolute beautiful thing to behold. And I was lucky that I came from a very creative family, a family who are very much pro expression and, you know, follow the things that interest you. And so I never was discouraged and told, you know, don't do that. And we've, you know, sort of bring our children up the same way. Mm. They're both, I mean, my daughter is 19 months old. But, you know, George is very creative, storytelling, drawing, painting, you know, all those sorts of things. And Holly, and you know, he's dancing all the time, and he's singing. And Holly, even at 18 months, you know, is showing signs of wanting to sing and dance and all those sorts of things. And we think that's just such a beautiful thing. And I hate when I hear that people have had those things taken away from them, whether it be from peer pressure or parents or just lack of enthusiasm around them.
Mm.
And
because you don't, when you go into an author going into schools, I never go in and see primary school children who say, I can't draw, I can't do this because I can't draw, I can't draw that thing. Particularly the younger primary school children. And then you get to, you know, you talk to a similar amount of adults and they would say, you know, I'll say, right, now let's draw an owl. Oh, I can't draw an owl. And you get so many people who really genuinely believe they can't draw. And I was listening to one author talking about this. And he said, well, can you pick up a pencil? And they'd say, yes, I can pick. Well, then you can draw. You can draw something. What you're saying is that you don't like what you're drawing. And that's a completely different thing. And you don't really get that. If you're looking at a six-year-old, they don't say that. They just they see what it is that they've put on the paper. And that is the thing that is in their mind.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I think the ability to see the truth within the abstraction is a very important thing, something that should be encouraged with children, adolescents, adults.
Yeah.
Everyone should be encouraged to see the truth within the abstraction. And I heard a very sad, something that I thought was quite a sad story, of a woman who told me that her parents had always told her she had no imagination. So she went through life believing she had no imagination. She wasn't creative at all. And it wasn't until she met her husband who encouraged her that she was able to start expressing herself. And in small ways at first. But then as you start and get into it and you find that little spark, that little thing that really excites you, then, you know, it suddenly becomes, each day becomes easier and easier. And I just I hate when people try and take that spark away from other people. And
I think sometimes it's the pressure of how much you have to do, like stuff that needs to be done, whether as a child is like or an adolescent is like the homework kind of pressure and conforming with peers, but then as an adult it's having to do all the stuff of daily living that if you don't leave a space to be creative in, it's very easy to let everything else push that out.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for boredom, definitely.
I think Mike 3 might be giving us a little bit of grief here, so I'm going to switch you over to Mike 4.
Okay.
And see how we go there.
Do you want me to move?
Yeah, move that over there. See how we go. There we go. That's better. If you just pop that there we go.
Okay.
Try that one out.
I'll lower it down a bit. Is that better?
Yep, not so high. Okay. There we go. Some people, if you're listening on headphones, you might have got a bit of a popping noise there.
Uh-huh.
But it seems that mic 3 was quite was quite low. So where were we? Yes. So I think it's really important that we encourage people, no matter what age, and encourage people to look at these amazing things, no matter what they are, and try and draw inspiration. And I mean, Carisbrook Castle itself is an inspiration. I mean, it's history. It's the magic that sort of surrounds this place. I mean, even just wandering around its walls, regardless of the time of year or weather, there's always something fantastic, I think.
And there are things, when you get the molehills up there as well, sometimes things come out of those that you wouldn't believe, you know, arrowheads or, you know, little musket balls, that sort of thing. So there's always stuff coming to the surface again.
I mean, and then going back to these treasures, I mean, what have they seen? What is the have those treasures seen over the centuries? And I always think to myself, it just blows my mind to think that 1,000 years ago, someone picked up a piece of whatever, a bone, or fashioned some ceramic, or someone had the ability to take a piece of metal and forge it into something. What sort of amazing alchemy is that?
I've just been doing some storytelling with Barton Primary School, and we were using Roman artefacts, actual genuine Roman pieces that we were loaned by the museum service.
We'll talk about that in a minute. We'll take a little quick break, and I'll tell you my own story about Roman artefacts shortly.
Vectors Radio, FM 104.6, Isle of Wight's community station.
West Wight Audio, the island's technical troubleshooters. Having problems with your phone, or are your electrics on the blink? Maybe you need your appliances, or you're building wiring tested, or just a light fitted. We've got it covered. For friendly, reliable service, call Kelvin on 754666 or click westwhiteaudio.co.uk. All island coverage.
Medina Theatre, your premier venue for arts, music and comedy.
Barbara Dixon teams up with Nick Holland for a very special night of live music on the 11th of March. There's a welcome return for Seven Drunken Nights, the story of the Dubliners on the 18th of March, and celebrate 25 years of circus horrors on the 22nd of March. This roller coaster ride of a show is for ages 16 and over.
Call the box office on 823884 or visit medinatheatre.co.uk.
This is a message for anyone on the island who is affected by multiple sclerosis. The Isle of Wight support group aims to help people affected as well as their wider family networks living on our island. The types of support we can offer range from our unique free alternative therapy voucher scheme, the availability of health and welfare grants, to the numerous social events we organise and invite everyone to attend. We firmly believe building a friendship network can really help people when they need it most and prevent isolation. Go online at whitems.org.uk. Or if you want to talk to someone, please give our helpline a call on 0797 662 9012. Thank you.
Setting up Vectis Radio in 2010 was all about putting something back into the community and giving people of all ages and abilities a chance to broadcast that they probably wouldn't get anywhere else.
Hi, my name is Robert Clark. I got the nickname Chip when I completed the four-piece radio course at Vectis Radio, which builds confidence and communication.
I get a real buzz seeing someone with a lack of confidence within a short period of time gaining enough to stick themselves behind a microphone and do something that they've always wanted to do.
Since being on the course, my speech and language has improved so much.
It's not about money or pats on the back. It's all about community, giving people a chance and helping people.
Vectis Radio, bringing the community together.
Music variety. Music variety that blows your mind. Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
What do you think of my spooky music? You like my spooky music?
It's good.
Yeah. A wonderful composer called William White wrote that for me. It's actually part of a thing we're doing together, which is a spoken word EP, I guess you could call it. And he composed some amazing music to go with some of my stories.
It's very atmospheric.
It is, isn't it? So we're talking a little bit about the Romans, and you were saying that you were doing some storytelling with actual Roman artifacts.
Yes, So we talked a little bit about, you know, who they might belong to and what they might be worth, whether they were valuable to the people, or, and then we used them as an inspiration for stories. And there were two groups of children using exactly the same artifacts, and the stories that came out as a result were so different and so imaginative, and it was just an incredible amount of fun in the creation of the story. It's just a nice thing to do.
When I was about 16, I was in Kent, and I was just walking, and I found this thing. I looked at it and I thought, oh, that's a penny. And I looked a bit close and I thought, gee, that's a bit rough around the edges. And I picked it out, and it was a little Roman coin. And I couldn't believe it.
Wow, who dropped that?
I know.
And how long ago?
Yeah, and how important to them was this coin? I mean, I thought to myself, could this person have been off to buy some bread or something? You know, what? Or was it just some coin that, you know, they didn't think anything of it? I mean, it's just that, to me, I thought, this thing that has been laying in the soil, What journey has it been on? Was it even dropped here, or was it dropped way over there and over the centuries has made its way down? Or was it dropped and then the earth came down over it and it made its way back up?
Like the molehill.
Like the molehill. But even before that, what stories and what journeys had it been on before it was even lost? Yeah. From the day that it was minted through to landing in that person's hand, going into their purse or their pocket or wherever.
And what had it bought in its time as a coin?
Yeah, and it just, to me, it was just mind-boggling. And that, I think, is the power of storytelling. And which leads me on to the Isle of Wight Storytelling Festival. So it's the 21st, 22nd of February, this weekend. Yep. The end of
Friday and Saturday.
Yep. And so the end of half term holidays, yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
How did it come about?
We felt that the island needed a storytelling hub, really. I suppose.
But more than storytelling, but a story hub.
Yeah.
So story in all its forms. So whether it's fact or fiction, whether it's written or spoken,
songs,
whether it's sung.
Yeah. Poetry.
In so many different forms, we felt that we wanted to have like a kind of a celebration of just the fun of stories, because sometimes it can become quite leaden, you know, if you're having to write an essay or you're having to, you must do your reading when you get home. And we just wanted to kind of have families and children and young people just like celebrate the word in all its different forms. And
yeah, because I think I just pick up on what you were saying about in schools, it's quite prescriptive. You follow a route through books that you start off with the, you know, this level and then you move up to that level. So you don't get a huge amount of say in what you're going to be reading. So in this way, it's, we can, you know, give children the just, you know, the sort of fun to read what they want to read,
mm-hmm.
and find out about the things they want to find out about.
And also introduce them to some amazing authors. Mm-hmm. So we've been really lucky. We've been able to bring two excellent illustrator and authors. Three of them over from the mainland. They're three very well known people, so young people will have a chance. Children and families will have a chance to actually meet these people who have become kind of iconic in the story world.
Yeah, should we maybe we ought to explain a little bit more about that? Should we take you start? I'll take the next one, and you take the third.
Well, one of our on Friday, our headliner is Corky Paul, and he was the illustrator of Winnie the Witch books, which many young people, many parents will have read over and over again, and they're actually really good from a parent's point of view because the pictures are so detailed. There's always lots to talk about in them, and the storyline is good too. And Winnie the Witch is a quite anarchic character at times.
I was we're lucky enough to have Medina Books coming to do a bookshop, and I was over there this morning looking at their Corky Paul selection of books that they've got in specially, and one of them was about dragon poo, I think it was, and it was just so funny and delightful. And I saw this book and I thought, I know exactly who I need to buy that book for. It's just all those.
So it's just great that you can actually meet the person who drew something that was important in your childhood.
Yeah, definitely. We've got a few books illustrated by Corky Paul at home, actually, so that's quite a thrill. And you're right, I mean, the level of detail, and I think the one of the things that I like about the illustrations are the colour schemes and the way they convey a mood and a sense of wonder. Just by using the shading and they've worked so well.
Yes,
with the, I guess the almost eccentric way of drawing these things. They're beautiful.
Yeah, and we're very lucky to have Sarah McIntyre, who, as well as being a wearer of fabulous hats and skirts, she is a very talented cartoonist. And illustrator, so she does actually write a cartoon, but she's illustrated for lots of different authors, including Philip Reeve and David O'Connell, and she also writes her own books. And she's got one called Grumpy Corn, which is about a unicorn who wants to write a book, but he's just really grumpy about it with all the other people who are trying to help him finish this story. And we're very lucky because we've got her coming in twice on Saturday. The other book that she's bringing with her is The Legend of Kevin. And I think if you know any Kevins out there, then you'll know that they are legends. My husband's best friend is called Kevin, and we love him. And this story is about a fat pony who flies. And it's just that her books are just so magical and expressionful, if that's such a word, colourful and lovely. And I've been quite a fan of her work for some years, so I shall be very delighted to meet her again.
And then we also have Nick Sharratt coming, who is probably best known for his illustration of Tracy Beaker.
And he's also illustrated for
Julia Donaldson
and
Jeremy Strong.
Oh, Jeremy Strong. When my children were little, we loved Jeremy Strong. Mm. And I didn't know that he was the illustrator for that until fairly recently. So I'll be really interested to meet him as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I think one of the nice things about the Story Festival too is that it's not just for young people, because for little children, it can also be for anybody who's maybe at that point when they're trying to decide they really love drawing, but can they do something with it? Well, actually, yes, you can. You can actually make a career as an illustrator, and you can come and meet people who have done that. So you can come and you can bring your little siblings along, and they can come and enjoy the stories, but you can also maybe get the chance just to ask them some questions that maybe will set your footsteps in on the route of becoming an author and illustrator too.
And also for the parents as well, because it's very nostalgic to look at the books that you loved when you were a child and you're now reading to your children.
Yeah.
So I think it's a win all round, really.
Yeah.
So we've got a few local authors as well coming on.
Yes, we do. We're very lucky. We've got Kieran Larwood coming, who's of Podkin fame, and he's got a huge following on the island. He's going to come and do his Five Realms fantasy map making. Although at last look, he's nearly sold out. So if you want to see Kieran, you better get over and have a look at the website and buy yourself a ticket.
And what's the website?
It's iwstoryfestival.com.
And they better get in soon as well, because the sales go off on Wednesday at midnight.
Yep.
That's only online.
That's online, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You can still come and get some tickets at the box office if there are any left.
But that's only if there's any left.
Exactly.
So who else have we got? Who are local people have we got coming?
So we've got...
We've got Peter Rainford, and she's probably best known for her...
She sort of does rhyming stories, doesn't she? With she's got the Isabella Rottenspeller. You may have seen that one, and she's actually launching a new one. But the one that she's reading from is Jacob Stark.
Jacob Stark. I couldn't think. I'm thinking of Joseph.
Yeah.
Jacob Stark is Scared of the Dark.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a very good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we've got.
We've got Adam Gatterall, actually, who's he's not an author, but he is really well known on the island for doing graphic novel kind of illustrations. We've worked with him quite a lot over the last few years, and he's doing Make a Monster Design, and he also does spoken word. He's really well known for being a spoken word artist, so he's doing nonsense poems. And that is on Saturday, so he's here in the morning and the afternoon doing two different things.
Mm-hmm. And we have Zoe Sadler.
Zoe's fantastic, isn't she?
Her drawings are just beautiful. And she's doing Chase Your Dreams on Saturday.
Yeah, and she's making dream catchers with children, because this is one of the things that we'd always felt, that not only do we want the children to come and be able to listen to the author or whoever's giving the talk, but also to do something. So that it's all interactive. There's always something to take away with you. So she's doing dream catchers.
Zoe actually drew a picture of a toad monster thing, and asked for people to come up with names. So I asked my son. My son's name's George. I said, what do you think that thing creature should be called? And he turned around and he said, "That's Squishy George." And, Zoe loved it so much that she called it Squishy George and sent him some of the picture, yeah.
Very nice. We've got Paul Barrett, who had a lop-eared rabbit who he's written stories about. And I've actually had a hand in helping him with illustrating the books. But not only is he an author, he works for the ambulance service, and along with all the other people who work in that fantastic place, regularly go and pick up people and take them to the hospital, scrape them up off of whatever disaster that has befallen them. So I'm really supporting Paul. He's on Saturday morning first thing, and his spot is called A Rabbit's Tail. So it's going to be all about his lop-eared rabbit that was huge by all accounts, because I've seen photographs of it. It's nearly as big as he is.
Yeah, he showed me a photo the other day when we met. And it seems like a quite the behemoth of an animal.
I think it sure was.
Yeah. There's I just like to go back a little bit to you were talking about like historical things informing stories, because one of the events going on is a theatre performance, more or less, called the Ark and Dove, and the Ark and Dove were two ships that went over to Maryland in America as all following on in the footsteps of the Mayflower, although a little bit later on in time. And Michelle O'Brien has created a story following two of the people who were on the journey, and she's going to be telling this tale.
Wow, that sounds fascinating.
Yes, that will be very good. That's on the Friday afternoon.
Yeah. And you both will be doing some performances as well readings and performances as well, yes?
Mm. Yeah, we're both doing two, actually, aren't we, now? I think she's quite exciting. So I've got one on Friday afternoon at 3:15. I'm whipping Fidget out. He is my baby owl who doesn't eat owl food. And this kind of goes back to my experience as a parent when I had two children who would not eat the food that I cooked and stuck in front of them. And as a parent, I think, you know, a lot of parents go through this and you just want to tear your hair out at the time. But I'm pleased to say...
But I haven't got any hair.
I'm pleased to say they are now... Well, I have one adult and one 16-year-old and they're both healthy. You know, they have grown up. They eat things now. So if you are in that situation, don't despair. So that's what Fidget is all about. He's a naughty little owl. And then I've got Bloomin' Marvellous, which I'm doing on Saturday at lunchtime, and that is looking at the Nature Journal that I created last year, and we will be making nature journals of our own for you to take home.
Fantastic.
In fact, you might have spotted that there is a kind of nature theme. It sort of links in with the biosphere status of the island. We wanted to just tap into the fantastic resource that we live on, basically. So I'm doing a nature story walk, actually. So our, which means what we do is we'll actually leave the building of the riverside and just go outside and maybe just see what we can see. See if we can find some mini beasts or some worms or something like that. And we'll walk a little bit, have a look for something, sit down, have a story, move a little bit further, have another story, and just have a little walk and be inspired by nature, really, for our stories. So that's on Saturday lunchtime. Yep, at 12:15. And then I'm also doing another session about bats and bugs and bunnies, so various stories and things like that, later on in the day at 3 o'clock.
Fantastic. So we'll take a little break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about how we got into this crazy world of telling stories.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, your station, your community.
Vectis Radio is pleased to announce another variety night to be held at the Riverside Centre on the 14th of March from 7:30 p.m.
Artists confirmed so far include Huxley, The Ohms Trio, The Horsebox Theatre Company, John Hacker, Osha Taylor, Captain Nash Pirate Adventures, Hannah Brewer, Matt Legg, and a special competition for the grown-ups from Doris Pink's Florists, plus loads more.
So that's magic, music, dancing, theatre, floristry, pirating, and even more things we aren't even sure are things.
There's a cash bar and free parking too.
All the proceeds go to keep Vectis Radio on the air.
So don't delay, get your tickets now for the minuscule price of £9 each by emailing tickets at vectisradio.fm.
Island Harbour presents The Breeze Restaurant and Bar. We offer a variety of delicious foods which can be enjoyed inside the recently refurbished restaurant or outside, overlooking the picturesque marina. Start your day well with something from our breakfast menu. Enjoy afternoon tea with a slice of freshly made cake or drop by for an evening meal with the family. We offer a range of tasty British classics with a choice of daily specials. Our produce is locally sourced to ensure quality and taste. The Breeze Restaurant and Bar, one of the Solent's best-kept secrets. Call us today on 533 388.
The Riverside Centre is a thriving community venue located next to Newport Harbour in the centre of the Isle of Wight. It is a place of integration in both ethos and practice and is used by a diverse group of people and organisations from morning till evening, 7 days a week. The Riverside Centre is a great place to hold an event, whatever the occasion. It is available for meetings, weddings, parties, conferences, exhibitions, regular groups and so much more. They have a fully licensed bar and catering facilities and a range of equipment and services that can be hired. Call them 01983 524 058 or email hello@actioniw.org.uk or go to communityactionisleofwight.org.uk.
Tune in for Weekend Love on Vectis Radio on Saturdays and Sundays between 10 p.m. and midnight. 2 hours of tunes that'll make you want to be horizontal. I'm quite proud of myself, I'll clean that bit up. We used to call it the action section.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the island's local station.
So coming up to the last part of the show, the last 18 minutes. This for me is the, you know, it's like you see the finishing line there, and we've got to just plow on through. So we'll give a little bit more detail about where it's going to be, the times and things at the end. But before that, I really wanted to talk about your experiences getting into this. What brought you to it? What brought you to this point? As a writer, as a storyteller, as an illustrator, all those sorts of creative things, is it something that you've always done? Is it something that you came to later in life? I mean, I'm really fascinated to hear these sorts of stories because I've heard all sorts.
Okay. So my dad, my brother and my uncle were all in the arts one way and another. My brother was a sculptor and went to the Royal Academy, and he was about 9 years older than I am. So he was very much, when he was at college, I was 5 or 6 or 7, you know. So he sort of got me into that creative thing quite early because he was very flamboyant with his paint and art equipment. So it kind of started me off on the route of, I knew I was going to end up doing something in the arts, but I just didn't know what. I started off in fashion design. And soon discovered, although I really liked making hats, it was the sort of atmosphere of being around people that were a bit, you know, could be a little bit catty. The whole atmosphere just wasn't really me.
I've heard about the sordid life of hat makers.
Yeah. And I ended up wandering from that into theatre. Well, I lived in Plymouth at the time, so I was down at Theatre Royal. Worked there for a bit, and then I ended up in what was then Plymouth College of Art and Design. I believe it's now all part of the university. And I did graphic design there, which led me into illustration. Right. And I had my moment of epiphany in my second year when I was working. We were set a project by another author and illustrator of picture books, and his name is Simon James. And he came and he sat with me and he read me one of his books. And it was just like I'd landed on Earth, you know. I just thought, this is it. This is exactly what I need to do with the rest of my life. I just was so in love with the form of it being so simple. There were a few words. The pictures were beautiful. And the art of telling the story was exactly what I was looking for. So I knew at that moment, I was then 24, and I was trying my best to stay...
Last year, wasn't it?
Year before last.
Right. <okay. laughs>
I was doing my best to stay in education for as long as possible. So I did another 2 years beyond that to make it into a degree. And then I just started working as an illustrator. And I've had to be quite dogged about it because it's not easy. And I just kept, you know, going in the direction that I knew I needed to go in and just not given up. And feel like I'm now getting there. So as I say, you know, now I'm nearly 30. I feel like I've almost made it. What about you, Sue?
As a storyteller, my storytelling started when I had three young sons, and when we would go on long walks and their legs would get tired and they'd start moaning and kind of groaning. And so we started inventing stories, really, as we went, and including them in the stories as we were walking. And it just really made the miles disappear, stopped the moaning, and just became something that sort of we built on. And then for a while we were living in an area in like off-grid, and first thing in the morning the boys would come and climb in with us, and we couldn't be bothered to get up and light the Coleman's lamp at the time. So we used to make up stories lying in bed together, and my husband would get them to turn the imaginary pages over, and we would have ongoing stories that lasted sort of days and weeks. And so it sort of started like that. And then a friend of mine, they'd had an art commission to create a story tent with beautiful panels, illustrated applique panels of things like Cinderella and Jack and the Beanstalk, this frame tent. And they didn't have a storyteller to go inside it. And so when it was launched, they knew that I told stories to the boys, and they said, would I be willing to do the storytelling in that? And I went to, it was actually at Key Arts, the launch event, and I took the tent and put it up and told stories inside it, and haven't really looked back since. And I love that engagement with stories. I mean, I do enjoy books very much. I really like picture books. But I do find that storytelling has a slightly different, a different feel to it, in that you feel quite engaged with your audience, because you kind of read their... You look at their faces and you read their expressions, and you see them mirroring the expression that you might have on your face. And there's a very strong connection that can be quite magical when it works well.
Yeah, absolutely. And telling story is as much a performance as well as painting a picture with words, really. One of the things that I've always been very attracted to is the ability to convey pictures without actually having the pictures there. One thing that I always found terribly, the idea of just terribly romantic to me, was the idea of these wandering mummers and, you know, minstrels and whatnot, and just sort of wandering from town to town, making making a living by telling these stories and having these crowds around you, and I just thought, that's what a beautifully romantic life that seemed to me, forgetting the fact that, you know, you live in squalor and terrible disease. But, you know, it just thinking about that used to always really fascinate me. And I love the idea of having a little, I guess, a little caravan or something like that, and then just wandering around the the land and setting up shop and, you know, telling stories. And, you know, one of the things that I'm hoping to do this year is some street performance type stuff, telling stories and just seeing how that goes. Last summer I went down and down to the beaches, and we just stand there and tell stories and to anyone that wanted to listen.
And did you find that people would be engaged with that? Did you find it, you know, people didn't think you were just some crazy nutter?
Oh, no, they thought I was mad. Yeah,
definitely. I did, Christmas before last, they had a busking competition in Sandown, and I contacted them and said, have you got space for any spaces left? I'll do a storytelling busking thing. And it was one of the craziest things I think I've ever done.
I just wandered down to the beach and then set myself up, sit on the fence, or, you know, sit on the wall or whatever, and have my bell, ring a bell, and then tell a story. And the when I knew this was something I could do, I was very young, I guess I was early teens, and I can't remember what it happened. Basically, we were away for, about. We were all just sort of around the side of the road in the middle. And I just sat down and was recounting some grim tales that I knew, some obscure ones that, you know, not the big name stories, and just seeing these people, just these people I knew listening to me, I thought that was amazing. And I didn't get back into it until the birth of my son. My son was very young. We've got a couple of minutes left, but, and I'll just tell this story and then we'll get the details out, I promise. My son was maybe a month old, 2 months old. We were at a library, and my wife had gone off to do something, so I was just reading him a book. I was just sitting there, and these kids,
mm-hmm.
and then these adults just came and sat down while I was reading this story to my son.
It's powerful, isn't it?
It's a wonderful thing. Anyway, we've only got a few minutes left, so I want to get these details out to her, and where, so everyone knows where it is, how much it's going to cost them, what they can come and do, because I know there's free stuff as well.
Yeah,
there's stuff for all sorts of people.
Yeah.
So over to you guys. Tell us all. We've got about, you've got about 4 minutes, 5 minutes, maybe you got 6 minutes.
Well, it's at the Riverside Centre in Newport, so nice and central. You can get there on the bus, you can get there in a car, you can get there on your two legs. You can skateboard if you want.
Come along the river.
Come up the river.
Yeah, come up the river, indeed. Yeah, carry a pigeon, maybe.
Yeah.
And
maybe a pterodactyl.
So it's on Friday, this Friday, the 21st, and Saturday the 22nd, and things start at 10:30 in the morning.
But the doors will open around about 10 o'clock, and we, you know, if you haven't got a ticket and you desperately want to see something, get there for 10, because mm-hmm. we will open the box office then.
Mm-hmm.
And they're and very reasonably...
The Riverside Centre, isn't it?
Riverside Centre.
Opposite Kiosk.
It's very reasonably priced. We've got a few tickets that are £5. Most of them are £3, and there are quite a few free things, including if... As we've got World Book Day coming up in the 5th of March, I believe it is. So if you are somebody whose child needs dressing for World Book Day, come and see us, because we've got loads of dressing up clothes. And that's free to go in there and do. And you can make a few things if you want, or have something made for you, customised.
Many years ago, we did something for World Book Day. Well, for Book Week, I think it was called back then. And I went as Fungus the Bogeyman.
Oh, yes.
Very nice.
One of my favourite books as a child.
Definitely. Well, never mind.
We ought to say as well that the tickets are actually... The tickets are for the children with an accompanying adult. So if you are a parent and you've got three children with you, you just need the three tickets for the children, because you will be able to get in because you got a child's ticket.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yeah. Yeah, and so some of the free things include, like costume making, but we're also going to have typewriters and a writing corner where you can, you know, an area where you can make your own books, and junk modelling, and...
sensory play.
Yeah, and we're going to have Kathy Grogan's bringing owl pellets that you can dissect apart.
Oh, yes.
Nice.
That does sound interesting.
Yeah, and something else, we've got shadow puppets as well, and shadow puppet workshop.
Oh, I love puppets.
The shadow puppet will be stunning. I mean, that's definitely, that's not for young children. So if you know anybody who's like a little bit older, you know, an older child, it'd definitely be suitable for them.
Two sort of naturey things as well that I just wanted to mention quickly. One is the amazing world of nature, and Adam Barron, who knows, I mean, genuinely, he's a genius, this guy. He knows everything that you need to know about butterflies, and he's got spiders and stuff at home, but I'm hoping he won't bring those, because I'm mad at them.
Oh, I hope he does. I love spiders. In our house, there's a rule, you do not get rid of spiders. They're our friends.
Okay, mine can come to your house. and he's bringing with him a butterfly that's got an invisibility cloak, so that's really cool. And my friend Dave Fairlamb, who is a genius when it comes to birds, he is looking at gulls, because I don't know about you, but when is a gull, because there are so many different ones, and he knows all about them. So he's again going to do a little walk along the quay and help you spot different sorts of gulls and birds, whoever's hanging out along the quay there.
You know what I love crows are my favorite birds. Crows and rooks and ravens.
Yeah,
the corvids. I love them. Yeah, they're amazing. Gulls not so much.
Yeah.
Well, after if you come on this, you might be a girl convert.
Maybe. I doubt it. I have been attacked by a seagull, and it is not pleasant at all, I can say.
You were probably asking for it.
Probably. Most bad things that happened to me.
So there are tickets available still. I mean, ideally, buy them online. But if you haven't decided, then come along on Friday or Saturday and you can buy tickets on the day. But we can't guarantee that you'll be able to get into anything. Things like the workshops have got a limited number of spaces. And and we are expecting quite a few people. So come and join them.
IWStoryFestival.com is the website.
Yeah.
Yes. So be there or be square. Yeah. You know, come along and hear all these wonderful people. It's going to be fantastic. You might even hear me prattling. I can't even remember what I'm doing. What did I say I was going to do? Tap dancing or something? Acrobatics?
You are on at 2:15 on Saturday.
2:15 on Saturday.
Storytelling. 10 plus, though, so it's obviously going to be super scary stuff.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe not scary. Intriguing.
Nonsense, normally. That's generally what I do. You know, I remember my dad introducing me to someone. And then this person said, "Oh, what do you do?" And I sort of, and my dad said, "Oh, something with cartoons or telling lies or something like that," which is kind of true, really. Anyway, we've got a couple of minutes left. I always like to say hello to my lovely wife, Amy. I hope you're listening. My one listener. My mum, who's listening from Australia. Hi, mum.
Hi, mum. Australia. What bit of Australia?
She lives about 300 miles northwest of New South Wales in a place called Tamworth, the country western capital of Australia.
I say.
Yeah, they have country and western festival every year where the town they live in, I think there's 20,000 people and it grows to 30,000 people.
Wow.
Overnight.
We're not expecting quite that kind of numbers here for our story festival.
Hope not.
Not this year. No. Next year, maybe.
10,000 people. And some country music, I hope. That would be amazing.
John Giddings will be worried. He'll be shaking in his boots.
It's a wonderful, I have to say, it's a wonderful facility. I love it there. I've been to a number of things. We've got about a minute left. So is there anything that you want people to know?
I do, because I know there's one thing we haven't mentioned, and that is that Graham Street and Donna are coming from the Bat Hospital.
We're bringing some bats.
And they are actually opening the Story Festival for us. And so I know that they have loads of people love coming to see them and coming to see the bats that they rescue and take care of. So, come and see them on the Friday morning at 10:30.
Thank you.
Your local station,
Vectis Radio,
FM 104.6.
Vectis Radio,
FM 104.6.